They left the temple just before sundown. The lion had crawled into the shade of some rocks, but stood up unsteadily to watch them go.
"It'll track us," moaned Om. "They do that for miles and miles."
"We'll survive."
"I wish I had your confidence."
"Ah, but I have a god to have faith in."
"There'll be no more ruined temples."
"There'll be something else,
and not even snake to eat."
"But I walk with my god."
"Not as a snack, though."
"And you're walking the wrong way, too."
"No, I'm still heading away from the coast."
"That's what I mean.
How far can a lion go with a spear wound like that in him?"
"What's that got to do with anything?"
"Everything."
And half an hour later, a black shadowy line on the silver moonlit desert. There were the tracks.
"The soldiers came this way. We just have to follow the tracks back. If we head where they have come from, we'll get where we're going."
"We'll never do it."
"We're travelling light."
"Oh, yeah, they were burdened by all the food and water they had to carry," said Om bitterly. "How lucky for us, we haven't got any."
Brother glanced at Vorbis. He was walking unaided now, provided that you gently turned him around whenever you needed to change direction. But even Om had to admit that the tracks were some comfort. In a way, they were alive in the same way that an echo is alive. People had been this way not long ago. There were other people in the world. Someone somewhere was surviving. Or not. After an hour or so, they came across a mound beside the track. There was a helmet atop it, and a sword stuck in the sand.
"A lot of soldiers died to get here quickly," said Brother.
Whoever had taken enough time to bury their dead had also drawn a symbol in the sand of the mound. Brother half expected it to be a turtle, but the desert wind had not quite eroded the crude shape of a pair of horns.
"I don't understand that," said Om. "They don't really believe I exist, but they go and put something like that on a grave."
"It's hard to explain. I think it's because they believe they exist," said Brother. "It's because they're people, and so was he."
He pulled the sword out of the sand.
"What do you want that for?"
"Might be useful."
"Against who?"
"Might be useful."
An hour later, the lion, who was limping after Brother, also arrived at the grave. It had lived in the desert for 16 years, and the reason it had lived so long was that it had not died, and it had not died because it had never wasted handy protein. It dug. Humans have always wasted handy protein ever since they started wondering who had lived in it. But on the whole, there are worse places to be buried than inside a lion. There were snakes and lizards on the rock islands. They were probably very nourishing, and everyone was in its own way a taste explosion. There was no more water. But there were plants, more or less. They looked like groups of stones, except where a few had put up a central flower spike that was a brilliant pink and purple in the dawn light.
"Where do they get the water from?"
"Fossil seas."
"Water that's turned to stone?"
"No, water that sank down thousands of years ago, right down in the bedrock."
"Can you dig down to it?"
"Don't be stupid."
Brother glanced from the flower to the nearest rock island.
"Honey," he said.
"What?"
The bees had a nest high on the side of a spire of rock. The buzzing could be heard from ground level. There was no possible way up.
"Nice try," said Om.
The sun was up. Already the rocks were warm to the touch.
"Get some rest," said Om kindly. "I'll keep watch."
"Watch for what?"
"I'll watch and find out."
Brother led Vorbis into the shade of a large boulder and gently pushed him down. Then he lay down too. The thirst wasn't too bad yet. He drank from the temple pool until he squelched as he walked. Later on, they might find a snake. When you considered what some people in the world had, life wasn't too bad. Vorbis lay on his side, his black-on-black eyes staring at nothing. Brother tried to sleep. He had never dreamed. Didactylos had been quite excited about that. Someone who remembered everything and didn't dream would have to think slowly, he said. "Imagine a heart," he said. Like many early thinkers, the Ephebians believed that thoughts originated in the heart and that the brain was merely a device to cool the blood. That was nearly all memory and had hardly any beats to spare for the everyday purposes of thinking. That would explain why Brother moved his lips while he thought. So this couldn't have been a dream, it must have been the sun. He heard Om's voice in his head. The tortoise sounded as though he was holding a conversation with people Brother could not hear.
Mine! Go away! No, mine! Both of them! Mine!
Brother turned his head. The tortoise was in a gap between two rocks, neck extended and weaving from side to side. There was another sound, a sort of gnat-like whining that came and went, and promises in his head. They flashed past, faces talking to him, shapes, visions of greatness, moments of opportunity, picking him up, taking him high above the world. All this was his. He could do anything. All he had to do was believe in me, in me, in me. An image formed in front of him. There, on a stone beside him, was a roast pig, surrounded by fruit, and a mug of beer so cold the air was frosting on the sides.
Mine!
Brother blinked. The voices faded, so did the food. He blinked again. There were strange after-images, not seen but felt. Perfect though his memory was, he could not remember what the voices had said, or what the other pictures had been. All that lingered was a memory of roast pork and cold beer.
"That's because they don't know what to offer you," said Om's voice quietly. "So they try to offer you anything. Generally they start with visions of food and carnal gratification."
"They got as far as the food," said Brother.
"Good job I overcame them then," said Om. "No telling what they might have achieved with a young man like yourself."
Brother raised himself on his elbows. Vorbis had not moved.
Were they trying to get through to him too?
"I suppose so. Wouldn't work. Nothing gets in, nothing gets out. Never seen a mind so turned in on itself."
"Will they be back?"
"Oh, yes, it's not as if they've got anything else to do."
"When they do," said Brother, feeling light-headed, "could you wait until they've shown me visions of carnal gratification?"
"Very bad for you."
Brother Numrod was very down on them, but I think perhaps we should, well, know our enemies, yes?
Brother's voice faded to a croak.
"I could have done with the vision of the drink," he said wearily.
The shadows were long. He looked around in amazement.
"How long were they trying?"
"All day. Persistent devils, too. Thick as flies."
Brother learned why at sunset. He met Saint Ungulant the Anchorite, friend of all small gods, everywhere.
"Well, well, well," said Saint Ungulant. "We don't get very many visitors up here. Isn't that so, Angus?"
He addressed the air beside him. Brother was trying to keep his balance because the cartwheel rocked dangerously every time he moved. They'd left Vorbis seated on the desert 20 feet below, hugging his knees and staring at nothing. The wheel had been nailed flat on top of a slim pole. It was just wide enough for one person to lie uncomfortably. But Saint Ungulant looked designed to lie uncomfortably. He was so thin that even skeletons would say, "Isn't he thin?" He was wearing some sort of minimalist loincloth, insofar as it was possible to tell under the beard and hair. It had been quite hard to ignore Saint Ungulant, who had been capering up and down at the top of his pole, shouting, "Cooey!" and "Over here!" There was a slightly smaller pole, a few feet away, with an old-fashioned half-moon cut out on the door privy on it. "Just because you were an anchorite," Saint Ungulant said, "didn't mean you had to give up everything." Brother had heard of anchorites, who were a kind of one-way prophet. They went out into the desert, but did not come back, preferring a hermit's life of dirt and hardship and dirt and holy contemplation and dirt. Many of them liked to make life even more uncomfortable for themselves by being walled up in cells, or living, quite appropriately, at the top of a pole. The Omnian Church encouraged them, on the basis that it was best to get madmen as far away as possible, where they couldn't cause any trouble and could be cared for by the community, insofar as the community consisted of lions and buzzards and dirt.
"I was thinking of adding another wheel," said St. Ungulant, "just over there, to catch the morning sun, you know."
Brother looked around him. Nothing but flat rock and sand stretched away on every side.
"Don't you get the sun everywhere, all the time?" he said.
"But it's much more important in the morning," said St. Ungulant. "Besides, Angus says we ought to have a patio."
"He could barbecue on it," said Om, inside Brother's head.
Said Brother, what
religion are you a saint of, exactly? An expression of embarrassment crossed the very small amount of face between St. Argulant's eyebrows and his moustache.
None, really. That was all rather a mistake, he said. My parents named me Sevrian Thaddeus Ungulant, and then one day, of course, most amusing, someone drew attention to the initials. After that, it all seemed rather inevitable.
The wheel rocked slightly. St. Ungulant's skin was almost blackened by the desert sun.
I've had to pick up herming as I went along, of course, he said. I taught myself. I'm entirely self-taught. You can't find a hermit to teach you herming, because, of course, that rather spoils the whole thing.
But there's Angus, said Brother, staring at the spot where he believed Angus to be, or at least where he believed St. Ungulant believed Angus to be.
He's over here now, said the saint sharply, pointing to a different part of the wheel. But he doesn't do any of the herming. He's not, you know, trained. He's just company. My word, I'd have gone quite mad if it wasn't for Angus cheering me up all the time.
Yes, I expect you would, said Brother. He smiled at the empty air in order to show willing.
Actually, it's a pretty good life. The hours are rather long, but the food and drink are extremely worthwhile.
Brother had a distinct feeling that he knew what was going to come next.
Beer cold enough, he said.
Extremely frosty, said St. Ungulant, beaming.
And the roast pig? St. Ungulant's smile was manic.
All brown and crunchy round the edges, yes, he said.
But I expect you eat the occasional lizard or snake, too.
Funny you should say that. Yes, every once in a while, just for a bit of variety.
And mushrooms, too, said Om.
Any mushrooms in these parts? Said Brother, innocently.
St. Ungulant nodded happily.
After the annual rains, yes. Red ones with yellow spots. The desert becomes really interesting after the mushroom season.
Full of giant purple singing slugs, talking pillars of flame, exploding giraffes, that sort of thing, said Brother, carefully.
Good heavens, yes, said the saint. I don't know why. I think they're attracted by the mushrooms.
Brother nodded.
You're catching on, kid, said Om. And I expect sometimes you drink water, said Brother.
You know it's odd, isn't it? Said St. Ungulant. There's all this wonderful stuff to drink, but every so often I get this, well, I can only call it a craving for a few sips of water. Can you explain that?
It must be a little hard to come by, said Brother, still talking very carefully, like someone playing a 50-pound fish on a 51-pound breaking strain fishing line.
Strange, really, said St. Ungulant, when ice-cold beer is so readily available to...
Where'd you get it?
The water, said Brother.
You know the stone plants?
The ones with the big flowers?
If you cut open the fleshy part of the leaves, there's up to half a pint of water, said the saint. Tastes like wee-wee, mind you.
I think we could manage to put up with that, said Brother, through dry lips. He backed towards the rope ladder that was the saint's contact with the ground.
Are you sure you won't stay? Said St. Ungulant. It's Wednesday. We get sucking pig plus chef's selection of sun-drenched, dew-fresh vegetables on Wednesdays.
We have lots to do, said Brother, halfway down the swaying ladder.
Sweets from the trolley?
I think perhaps.
St. Ungulant looked down sadly at Brother, helping Vorbis away across the wilderness.
And afterwards there's probably mints, he shouted through cupped hands.
No?
Soon the figures were mere dots on the sand.
There may be visions of sexual gratification. Oh, no, tell a lie, that's Fridays,
St. Ungulant murmured. Now that the visitors had gone, the air was once again filled with the zip and whine of the small gods. There were billions of them. St. Ungulant smiled. He was, of course, mad. He'd occasionally suspected this, but he took the view that madness should not be wasted. He dined daily on the food of the gods, drank the rarest vintages, ate fruits that were not only out of season but out of reality. Having to drink the occasional mouthful of brackish water and chew the odd lizard leg for medicinal purposes was a small price to pay. He turned back to the laden table that shimmered in the air. All this, and all the little gods wanted, was someone to know about them, someone to even believe that they existed. There was jelly and ice cream today, too.
All the more for us, eh?
Angus? Yes, said Angus. The fighting was over in Ifeeb. It hadn't lasted long, especially when the slaves joined in. There were too many narrow streets, too many ambushes, and above all, too much terrible determination. It's generally held that free men will always triumph over slaves, but perhaps it all depends on your point of view. Besides, the Ifeebian garrison commander had declared somewhat nervously that slavery would henceforth be abolished, which infuriated the slaves. What would be the point of saving up to become free if you couldn't own slaves afterwards? Besides, how'd they eat? The Omnians couldn't understand, and uncertain people fight badly, and Vorbis had gone. Certainties seemed less certain when those eyes were elsewhere. The tyrant was released from his prison. He spent his first day of freedom carefully composing messages to the other small countries along the coast. It was time to do something about Omnia. Brother sang. His voice echoed off the rocks. Flocks of scalbies shook off their lazy pedestrian habits and took off frantically, leaving feathers behind in their rush to get airborne. Snakes wriggled into cracks in the stone. You could live in the desert, or at least survive. Getting back to Omnia could only be a matter of time. One more day. Vorbis trooped along a little behind him. He said nothing, and when spoken to, gave no sign that he had understood what had been said to him. Om, bumping along in Brother's pack, began to feel the acute depression that steals over every realist in the presence of an optimist. The strange strains of "Claws of iron shall rend the ungodly" faded away. There was a small rock slide some way off.
"We're alive," said Brother, "for now, and we're close to home."
"Yes,
I saw a wild goat on the rocks back there."
"There's still a lot of them about."
"Goats?"
"Gods. And the ones we had back there were the puny ones, mind you."
"What do you mean?"
Om sighed.
"It's reasonable, isn't it? Think about it. The stronger ones hang around the edge, where there's prey. I mean, people. The weak ones get pushed out to the sandy places where people hardly ever go."
"The strong gods," said Brother thoughtfully. "Gods that know about being strong."
"That's right. Not gods that know what it feels like to be weak." "What? They wouldn't last 5 minutes. It's a god-eat-god world."
"Perhaps that explains something about the nature of gods. Strength is hereditary, like sin." His face clouded.
"Except that it isn't. Sin, I mean. I think perhaps when we get back I shall talk to some people."
"Oh, and they'll listen, will they? Wisdom comes out of the wilderness, they say."
"Only the wisdom that people want. And mushrooms."
When the sun was starting to climb, Brother milked a goat. It stood patiently while Om soothed its mind, and Om didn't suggest killing it, Brother noticed. Then they found the shade again. There were bushes here, low-growing, spiky, every tiny leaf barricaded behind its crown of thorns. Om watched for a while, but the small gods on the edge of the wilderness were more cunning and less urgent. They'd be here probably at noon when the sun turned the landscape into a hellish glare. He'd hear them. In the meantime, he could eat. He crawled through the bushes, their thorns scraping harmlessly along his shell. He passed another tortoise, which wasn't inhabited by a god, and gave him that vague stare that tortoises employ when they're deciding whether something is there to be eaten or made love to, which are the only things on a normal tortoise mind. He avoided it and found a couple of leaves it had missed. Periodically, he'd stomp back through the gritty soil and watch the sleepers. And then he saw Vorbis sit up, look around him in a slow, methodical way, pick up a stone, study it carefully, and then bring it down sharply on Brother's head. Brother didn't even groan. Vorbis got up and strode directly towards the bushes that hid Om. He tore the branches aside, regardless of the thorns, and pulled out the tortoise Om had just met. For a moment it was held up, legs moving slowly, before the deacon threw it, overarm, into the rocks. Then he picked up Brother with some effort, slung him across his shoulders, and set off towards Omnia. It happened in seconds. Om fought to stop his head and legs retracting automatically into his shell, a tortoise's instinctive panic reaction. Vorbis was already disappearing round some rocks. He disappeared. Om started to move forward and then ducked into his shell as a shadow skimmed over the ground. It was a familiar shadow and one filled with tortoise dread. The eagle swept down and towards the spot where the stricken tortoise was struggling, and with barely a pause in the stoop, snatched the reptile and soared back up into the sky with long, lazy sweeps of its wings. Om watched it until it became a dot, and then looked away as a smaller dot detached itself and tumbled over and over towards the rocks below. The eagle descended slowly, preparing to feed. A breeze rattled the thorn bushes and stirred the sand. Om thought he could hear the taunting, mocking voices of all the small gods. St. Ungulant, on his bony knees, smashed open the hard, swollen leaf of a stone plant. "Nice lad," he thought. Talked to himself a lot, but that was only to be expected. The desert took some people like that, didn't it, Angus? "Yes," said Angus. Angus didn't want any of the brackish water. He said it gave him wind. "Please yourself," said St. Ungulant. "Well, well, here's a little treat. You didn't often get Kilopoda aridius out here in the open desert. And here were three, all under one rock. Funny how you felt like a little nibble, even after a good meal of petit porc rôti avec pommes de terre nouvelles, et légumes du jour, et bière glacée avec figments de l'imagination." He was picking the legs of the second one out of his tooth when the lion padded to the top of the nearest dune behind him. The lion was feeling odd sensations of gratitude. It felt it should catch up with the nice food that attended to it and, well, refrain from eating it in some symbolic way. And now here was some more food, hardly paying it any attention. Well, it didn't owe this one anything. It padded forward, then lumbered up into a run. Oblivious to his fate, St. Ungulant started on the third centipede. The lion leapt. And things would have looked very bad for St. Ungulant if Angus hadn't caught it right behind the ear with a rock. Brother was standing in the desert, except that the sand was as black as the sky and there was no sun, although everything was brilliantly lit. "Ah," he thought, "so this is dreaming." There were thousands of people walking across the desert. They paid him no attention. They walked as if completely unaware that they were in the middle of a crowd. He tried to wave at them, but he was nailed to the spot. He tried to speak, and the words evaporated in his mouth. And then he woke up. The first thing he saw was the light slanting through a window. Against the light was a pair of hands raised in the sign of the holy horns. With some difficulty, his head screaming pain at him, Brother followed the hands along a pair of arms to where they joined not far under the bowed head of Brother Numrod. The Master of Novices looked up.
"Brother?"
"Yes."
"Om be praised."
Brother craned his neck to look around.
"Is he here?"
"Here. How do you feel?"
"I..." His head ached, his back felt as though it was on fire, and there was a dull pain in his knees.
"You were very badly sunburned," said Numrod, "and that was a nasty knock on the head you had in the fall."
"What fall?"
"Fall. From the rocks in the desert. You were with the Prophet," said Numrod. "You walked with the Prophet, one of my novices."
"I remember the desert," said Brother, touching his head gingerly. "But the Prophet?"
"Prophet. People are saying you could be made a bishop or even an EM," said Numrod. "There's a precedent, you know. The most holy Saint Bobby was made a bishop because he was in the desert with the Prophet Ossory. And he was a donkey."
"But I don't remember any prophet. There was just me and..." Brother stopped. Numrod was beaming.
"Vorbis?" "He most graciously told me all about it," said Numrod. "I was privileged to be in the place of lamentation when he arrived. It was just after the Sestine prayers. The Cenobite was just departing, well, you know the ceremony, and there was Vorbis, covered in dust and leading a donkey. I'm afraid you were across the back of the donkey.
I don't remember a donkey, said Brother.
Donkey? He picked it up at one of the farms. There was quite a crowd with him.
Numrod was flushed with excitement.
And he's declared a month of Jadra. The double penances and the council has given him the staff and the halter, and the Cenobite has gone off to the hermitage in Scant.
Vorbis is the eighth prophet, said Brother.
Prophet? Yeah, of course, of course.
And was there a tortoise? Has he mentioned anything about a tortoise?
Tortoise? What have tortoises got to do with anything?
Numrod's expression softened.
But of course, the prophet said the sun had affected you. He said you were raving, excuse me, about all sorts of strange things.
He did?
He sat by your bed for 3 days. It was inspiring.
How long since we came back?
Back? Almost a week.
A week?
He said the journey exhausted you very much.
Brother stared at the wall.
And he left orders that you were to be brought to him as soon as you were fully conscious,
said Numrod.
He was very definite about that.
His tone of voice suggested that he wasn't quite sure of Brother's state of consciousness even now.
Do you think you can walk? I can get some novices to carry you, if you'd prefer.
I have to go and see him now.
Now? Right away. I'll expect you'll want to thank him.